in toward the 1976 election, called it a disgrace. This, incidentally, is the same Jimmy Carter who, as president, led the fight to repeal the Byrd Amendment and impose a total trade boycott on Rhodesia. How did the Arab boycott, which had been in effect against Israel since 1948, suddenly, in 1976, become a disgrace? The answer appears to be that in the presidential election year 1976, the Israeli partisans in Congress and the Israeli lobby decided it was time for a political showdown, an all-out attempt to shatter the Arab boycott by involving the US government and its various agencies and departments in a concerted effort to destroy it. The tactics were simple and time-tested, call it religious or racial discrimination, or, better still, anti-Semitic. Under this banner of righteousness, the campaign began. The opening barrage came from the Commerce Oversight and Investigation Subcommittee, under the chairmanship of Johnny Moss, DECAL, which reported that inadequate steps by executive agencies in dealing with the Arab trade boycott of Israel have compromised U.S. principles of free trade and freedom from religious discrimination. Following this, Representative Bella Abzug, chairwoman of the House Government Operations Subcommittee on Information and Individual Rights, demanded that the Securities and Exchange Commission disclose publicly any information it had on boycott participation by U.S. companies and to formally require every company to disclose whether or not it is observing the boycott. This disclosure requirement was a transparent attempt to involve the secretary in matters wholly extraneous to its jurisdiction, simply to harass American companies who were doing business with the Arab countries, the only apparent reason being to find out their names, so that the Israeli lobby could bring pressure on them. Nonetheless, the secretary quickly got into the spirit of things, and, among other steps, sternly warned brokerage houses and financial institutions not to discriminate against any particular ethnic groups, nor comply with boycotts in underwriting securities. Next, the Department of Justice filed suit against the Bechtel Corporation and four related companies on charges of violating the federal antitrust laws by cooperating with the Arab boycott in dealing with subcontractors. Suddenly, out of the blue, Arthur Burns, chairman of the Federal Reserve Board, called for diplomatic action against the boycott and urged that, if that fails, then to consider legislation against it. How the Arab boycott affects the Federal Reserve, and why this suddenly became important, was not made clear by Chairman Burns. Under intense pressure on October 6, 1976, during the presidential debates, President Ford ordered the Commerce Department to release the names of American businesses that participate in the Arab trade boycott of Israel, presumably so that the Israeli lobby could boycott them. After the names were released, the Secretary of Commerce, Elliot Richardson, was reported by the Wall Street Journal as saying, "The program of disclosure has helped dispel the widespread impression that there has been some element of discrimination against American companies that have Jewish personnel or Jewish ownership." In addition, according to the department's general counsel, most boycott requests involve some relatively straightforward commercial certifications regarding transports and origins of goods. A department spokesman also said that they are revising the reporting form and will bounce the new questionnaire off Jewish groups and such congressional critics of the boycott as Democratic Reps John Moss of California and Benjamin Rosenthal of New York, emphasis supplied. Meantime, the Equal Employment Opportunities Commission filed sweeping commissioners' charges against Standard Oil, alleging having the biggest coup, however, came with the Treasury Department and the Internal Revenue Service. Heavy pressure was exerted on Congress by the Israeli lobby to include in the Tax Reform Bill of 1976 a provision imposing a huge tax penalty upon companies doing business abroad who observe the Arab boycott of Israel. The forces behind the amendment were led by Zeev Shor, economic minister of the Israeli embassy in Washington. In the course of the hearings on the bill, the Ford administration properly warned that the action wouldn't stop the boycott and actually could hurt. The other testimony at the committee hearings warned that this legislation could jeopardize the security of U.S. oil supplies in the Middle East, It was also opposed by others on the grounds that it was a distortion and misuse. None of this had any effect on the committee members, who were admonished by Senator Abraham Ribicoff, sponsor of the bill, warnings that the Arab boycott had become an important political issue in the 1976 election campaign. The Senate, in a panic and without debate, passed the bill overwhelmingly. The Israeli lobby had marshaled almost every impotent federal agency but the post office. U.S. News and World Report, September 27, 1976, summarizes the situation in the House committee in these words: "What is happening, say critics of the new legislation, is that lawmakers are attempting to make political points in an election year by portraying the boycott as a vehicle for religious discrimination against those of the Jewish faith." However, the House Commerce Subcommittee's study found that only 15 of 4,000 boycott requests examined had clauses of a religious or ethnic nature. Arab leaders justify their boycott as an economic sanction against Israel, applied in the same way that the US had curbed. While it may be somewhat irrelevant, it seems only fair to ask, at this point, where did the interests of the US lie in this matter of the Arab boycott? As we know, the US currently imports more than half of the oil consumed in this country. Approximately one-third of our oil imports come from Arab countries. As much as 90% of all the oil used by some of our allies comes from Arab countries. Our bill for foreign oil has increased enormously. Historically, most of the money spent by American consumers for petroleum products found its way into the pockets of other Americans in Texas, California, Oklahoma, and other oil-producing states. The money stayed in the US, and both the producers and the consumers of the oil were part of our domestic economy, and the money spent was simply recycled among Americans. However, as America's oil production declines and imports of foreign oil increase, and at higher prices, a whole new and unprecedented economic factor enters the picture. The tens of billions of dollars annually paid for foreign oil imports, which continues to increase year by year, no longer stays in this country, but is drained off mostly to the OPEC nations. This drain, unless offset by exports to the OPEC nations and others, or by foreign investments in the US, seriously affects the American economy and has a significant impact on the US balance of trade. That this was a matter of indifference to the Israeli partisans is evident from the following report, appearing in the September 12, 1977 issue of After the Commerce Department. Later this month proposes regulations to implement the new US anti-boycott law. Business finally will begin to get a picture of the impact the legislation will have on trade with the Arab world. Comments now flowing into the department not only suggest the effects could be dramatic, but also point up the continuing division between business and Jewish groups over the politically charged already, the shaky alliance between the Business Roundtable and the B'nai B'rith Anti-Defamation League that resulted in a joint statement of principles on how to deal with the boycott seems to have come undone. That agreement, which had collapsed during congressional hearings, only to be quickly patched up, helped mute the debate in Congress and speed the passage of legislation that both sides hailed as a bad faith. But now, suggested regulations submitted to Congress by the ADL and other Jewish groups have prompted DuPont Co. Chairman Irving S. Shapiro, who also chairs the roundtable, to charge the groups: "Business concerns run deeper than the tiff over the agreement. The proposals would seem to demonstrate a purpose of making U.S. trade with Arab countries so difficult as to be impossible," Shapiro wrote. "We do not believe it to be in the national interest to choke off Arab-American trade," adds the Rule of Law Committee, a group composed primarily of major U.S. banks and oil companies. The overall result of the ADL submission, if accepted, would be the disruption or termination of U.S. business activities in the Arab world. Although business and the Jewish groups diverge on a number of points, these issues are at the heart of the dispute, emphasis supplied. Yet, heedless of the consequences to the US economy, the Israeli partisans were not only trying to destroy trade relationships between American businesses and the Arab countries, but they were, at the same time, doing everything in their power to discourage and oppose Arab funds from being invested in this country. As a result, the Arab nations, tired of this hostility, are channeling billions of dollars, our dollars, into investments in European and other more hospitable countries. The Israeli lobby has defended its actions on the grounds that it doesn't want Arab investment in this country because of the fear that Arabs would gain too much control of American business. The argument is a